Thank you for inviting me to speak today. I've never been here.
No?
No, I've never been here. I used to live in Tiger, Georgia, and Wayfarers was what I discovered. And I remember some of you have been there, visited that place, and you know how beautiful it is. And it drew me in because I remember walking in there one day for the first time, saying, ooh, I want to play my cello here. Yeah. Because the vibration. But this has pretty good acoustics here, too. And I did bring a cello, and I will play just a little bit towards the end of my talk and kind of incorporate it in. So I am a lifelong musician. I started playing violin, gosh, well over 60 years ago. And music is my favorite subject, probably because it's my source of inspiration and expression. A lot of my social interaction, I play in several bands. My relaxation and even my communication, because I communicate with my instruments. And often I immerse myself in it, and I lose my sense of time, of day, and place. Maybe you do too. So some of you may also experience similar passions with painting, or poetry, or writing, or attending a flower garden. Or does anybody do beehives here? Yeah, maybe. So beehives, that's a passion, working with wood or clay. But there's something about music that can touch nearly all of us and can touch really deeply, whether we consider ourselves musicians or are a little bit tone deaf. My son, my only son, I was looking so forward to him having that musical ear, and he was tone deaf. But he has two children, and they're very musical. So at the ages of 9 and 10, there's still hope in our family. I think it skips a generation sometimes. We all know, I believe all of us here probably know and have experienced how music can elicit emotions, joy, sadness, agitation. It can relax us to sleep, or it can energize and help us get through the whole day. Music can be a tonic, and a soaring passage of music can pierce the heart, or a lament can unfreeze emotions. It's like breaking a dam and letting feeling flow where once it was obstructed and we felt immobilized. I found that music can be incredibly powerful also in helping people recenter and heal. And there are some examples from journals of science about how that works. So you don't have to just take my word for it. For one, it's heart healthy, and research has shown that blood flows more easily when music is played. It can also reduce your heart rate, lower blood pressure, decrease stress, hormone levels, and increase serotonin and endorphin levels in the blood. It also can elevate moods. Music can boost the brain's production of the hormone dopamine. And that helps relieve feelings of anxiety and depression. Music is processed directly in that part of the brain that is involved in mood and emotions. I thought that was interesting. It also can reduce stress by triggering biochemical stress reducers. So there's a chemistry to it. Music in the brain can help modulate emotions. Think about singing a lullaby to a baby to help her ease her or him to sleep. It also relieves symptoms of depression. And when you're feeling down in the dumps, music can actually help you pick you up. And it's sort of like exercise. It stimulates memories too. And so there's no cure for Alzheimer's, at least right now, or dementia. But music therapy has been shown to relieve some of the symptoms that one experiences. Music therapy can help relax an agitated patient or improve mood and open up communication with patients. I have a friend that I've played with for many years, Margie Swint, and she's a music therapist and used to go to professionally to a lot of different clients in Alzheimer's units. And I remember one time we were playing a St. Patrick's Day show at one of these places, and the memory care unit people were there, some in the front, some who hadn't really communicated for years. And there was one gentleman, he sat in the front and he was wheeled in. And he sat there as with no emotion. He hadn't talked. And then we started playing some of those old Irish tunes, When Irish Eyes Are Smiling, My Wild Irish Rose. And when we started playing those, something just clicked in him, and he started singing along, and people were, whoa, he has woken up. Yeah. So it works. It also can help manage pain. It manages pain by reducing the stress levels and providing a strong competing stimulus to those pain signals that enter the brain. Music therapy can assist actually in pain management and is. It eases it eases pain because it can reduce the perceived intensity of the pain, especially in geriatric care or intensive care or palliative medicine. It helps people eat less. Anybody have that issue? Playing soft music in the background, and dimming lights too if you want to, during a meal can help people slow down the pace of their eating and ultimately consume less food in one sitting. And it increases your workout endurance. A lot of you might use it with exercise. I know I have, and it's worked. So music is so much more than the arrangement of sounds in a composition of melody, harmony, rhythm, timbre. Those things that I learned when I was a kid, and that was the focus of music. So much more than that. It's one of the universal cultural aspects of all human societies. And as Willie Nelson said, music is the tool that can bind cultures together. Music is a language of emotion in that it can represent many different feelings, and it can barge into the soul with no boundaries, no limitations. And the power of music should never be underestimated. And I don't think it is. It hasn't been over history. So let's look at a little bit of history and how it relates to now. The history of music and sound as a healing power. Many cultures recognize the importance of music and sound in healing and meditation. Maybe you've had some of that here as well. Ancient civilizations in India and the Orient, Africa, the Celts, the Aborigines and Native Americans, they use and still do use healing sound to heal and achieve balance from within. The Tibetans still use bells and chimes and singing bowls and chanting as a foundation of their spiritual practice. In Indonesia, there's the echoing gamelan and the gong and the drum, and they're used in ceremonies to uplift and send messages. The Australian Aborigines and shamans in Greenland and the Americas use vocal toning and repetitive sound vibrations with instruments they create from nature. And they use these in sacred ceremonies to adjust imbalances of spirit. And the priests of ancient Egypt even knew how to use vowel sounds to resonate their energy centers or their chakras. They understood that direct link between different parts of the body and specific sounds. All of these cultures have understood that the overtones of all music sounds progress from the physical world into that spiritual world. And that's why music is so often, most religious services use it to raise the vibration of a congregation or a gathering of people upward to a more spiritual level. Bless you. Now consider this. Before there was the spoken word, there was harmonic language. And over the past about 25 years, there's been a lot of great research done on the origins of music, with some pretty remarkable findings from scientists who represent a lot of different fields, neurology and psychology, anthropology, linguistics, and even archaeology, coming together with their findings to find some pretty remarkable information. Some of that has been captured in a book called The Singing Neanderthals, The Origin of Language, Mind, and Body. It was written by the eminent archaeologist Stephen Mithen, and he writes of music as a precursor and a shaping factor and a force of language, because music allowed early man to express emotions that simple words could not. The language wasn't really developed. And he suggests that our system of communication, even today, was formed by representing nature with sounds that we could make. And over time, this communication system evolved as our brains evolved. So there's a lot of evidence on how we humans evolved over millions of years by miming nature as a form of interpersonal communication. The music of nature gave our primitive human ancestors ways to evoke emotion and meaning with vocalizations and their body movements as well. And there's another breakthrough book in the last 20 years about the origins of humans and music. Its author is a fellow named Mark Changizi, and he wrote Harnessed: How Language Mimicked Nature and Transformed Ape to Man. He writes that in nature, every movement makes a sound, and each of these sounds has a signature of some sort. He writes about how our primitive ancestors were highly attuned to the sounds around them, and they used those sounds and gestures to mimic their environment and to communicate concepts and feelings to their brothers and their sisters. And the music that they learned from the sounds of nature, by replicating rhythms and patterns of calls and clicks and whistles, all of this allowed primitive humans to interact and unify, and sometimes over long distances, communicate and help each other survive as people and as communities, and actually be able to build communities. Right now, I'm rereading a book that many of you probably read a long time ago. It's called Roots. Anybody ever read Roots? Alex Haley? Yeah. And I'm fascinated about how he relates how the Mandinka tribe used drums, animal calls, clicks, percussion to communicate across distances. They communicated critical information and fairly sophisticated information using these forms about who were the travelers coming their way from village to village, about the needs and conditions of the different villages, the potential dangers that were being experienced or may be coming in a way, whether it's enemies or weather or other conditions, the availability of resources. We have food, the others don't. We're willing to share it. Births, deaths, marriage, all of those important things of life and community. But today the soundscape of our lives is very, very different. Often nature is drowned out by the noise of human existence, isn't it? Even here in Western North Carolina, which is a paradise. The natural soundscape was the inspiration for our language and our expression and our evolution. But now it's been pretty difficult to find and focus these natural sounds, while our human-generated sounds blare out at us dissonantly and incessantly in our ears. We have to make a conscious effort to get away to places. I believe it's worth exploring and listening for those voices and the rhythms of the natural world that form the basis from which our own musical experience and expression emerged. I'll give you some examples. Talking about voices like the song of humpback whales. Now, that's not one that we can experience other than through recordings here in North Carolina. But a couple of years ago, my wife Barbara and I, we spent a week in Antarctica. And we had an opportunity to kayak in the Arctic Sea with these humpback whales. And in a way, you can hear and see firsthand their communications. both with each other and maybe with us. We were also able to see other sea mammals and birds in that distant and generally pretty quiet region of the world. Now, here in the forests of North Carolina, we have spent hours listening, just about every morning she does, to the myriad songs and the calls of birds, both melodies and the wild expressions of warning and mating and gathering. And they're coming through right now, some birds that we haven't seen before or haven't seen over the seasons. They're just moving through. Brief visit, yeah. There's the jazz rift given off by a nightingale, or the rhythmic tapping of woodpeckers, or the lovely song of a wood thrush. All of these things, you just got to focus and let it listen. Have you ever heard of an app where you can actually record these sounds and have the birds identified? Yes. Do some of you have that? What's it called? Remember what it's called? Yeah. Merlin. It's called Merlin, yeah. Unless there's another one you have, that's the one. Cornell University actually developed this, and it's used for people to do that identification in their own environments, but also used for some citizen science, which I think is great. Other sounds that we hear, and we may not consider music, but it is, there's the modulating hum of bees as they work in a hive or work around your native plants, your flowers. There's the clicking of beetles. There's the frogs that you mentioned earlier. I was going to say, I welcome frogs in here. Ah. Or even, if you really put your ear to it, the whispers of worms working through the compost heap contents. And then there are the sounds of weather and water. I live right along the Tessentee Creek that leads into the Little Tennessee. So I'm able on a daily basis to listen to some of those sounds, as well as the drone of wind blowing through reeds. That's music. And then there's that roar of those intense storms that we sometimes get here. And that's music to my ears. And when I lived in Tiger and had a little cabin with a metal roof, the rhythm of that. And today, it's the rhythm of the acorns sometimes falling. We were drumming, if you remember, at Wayfarers about 2 weeks ago, and the acorns were falling down on the drums, weren't they? You remember that? Yeah. There's the repeated crashing rhythms of waterfalls that we have so many of in our area here. That's a music. The diverse swoosh and bubbling songs of a brook, mountain streams. But to experience these sounds, because they can actually be in our presence and we can be kind of ignoring them, to experience these sounds, these symphonies of our natural world, we first have to get silent. You know, I do a hike at least once or twice a week, and I try to hike with some regular friends. And sometimes I don't because there's so much talking along the way. And I'll have to draw back and find myself a time during that hike when I can actually listen to what's going on instead of the chatter. Nothing wrong with the chatter, but it's different. So we have to get silent. And when we get silent, whatever arises from that silence begins the music of natural sound. It's going to move in us. Beneath the surface, it's going to emerge and then dwell a bit and then dissolve. And it's going to resonate with our bones, our blood, our organs, and our brains as well. So much so that it can change us, can literally change us because we are all vibrating. You all know this, right? Sometimes we need reminded. We're all vibrating and sound can change how we vibrate. And the frequency at which we vibrate, how our bones and organs and chakra resonate. Some of you may be familiar with the use of singing bowls to accentuate or adjust the state of vibration in our bodies. Have you ever had singing bowls here?
Yes.
Yeah. I thought you might. I don't know who brought them here, but I have a set of seven quartz crystal bowls at home, and I've had them for over 25 years. And I've used them to support meditation, balance, healing, shared them with different groups. Today I brought my cello, not bowls, but it's said that the cello is an instrument that is the closest to the human voice in range and tenor. Now, it doesn't go as high as a violin, but the range and tenor of it is to be closest to the human voice. It can express a call to heaven, as well as a low heartbeat, which I'm going to demonstrate in a minute. Exploring the voices and rhythms of our natural world can start by paying attention to our own heartbeats. Our mother's heartbeat, was the first music that we heard. It resonated with our bones, our blood, our organs, our brains, and it helped set up that vibration in each of us. It's the bass. So what I'd like you to do is just take a minute with me once I start giving you the heartbeat and listen to your own heartbeat, or imagine you're listening to your own heartbeat. And as I do this with the cello, kind of gently, maybe even gently touch or drum your chest if you like. You might close your eyes to give it focus. So give me a second here.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, as a musician, music is my expression. And playing my instrument allows me to extend myself and my connection with you and with the many forms of God. But I learned long ago that listening is at least or more importance to playing. I can play notes. I can play what's written on the paper or whatever's in my head. But if I'm not listening to the other musicians and listening to my own music in a serious way and really moving into it, I'm missing something. And any good jazz musician will attest to this. Because by listening, I become more connected, more opened up, and I shed ego too. And I can better support other musicians that I play with. I know that when we all listen with attention and intention, the intention to connect, then this connects us not only with each other, but with creation. Research, some of it that I've mentioned here on the origins of humans, is showing that music truly is part and parcel of where we've come from and who we are. It's so easy to forget who we are, isn't it? I know I often need reminded, which is one of the reasons I do a daily meditation. But I find that by simply taking the time to listen with intention to those sounds of nature that define us, then we truly are supported in that remembering and perhaps reminded about who we are. And so I thank you for taking the time today to listen, and thank you.